I'm going on Flemish.
Yeah, we're all ready if you're over here.
Okay, we're just about ready.
Okay.
Starting to the, if anyone has a chumash, we're going to be taking up the subject of Yosef's interpretation of the dreams of Pharaoh. But I'm concerned with one specific aspect of it, as I'll soon point out. Just trying to find a place here. Okay. Now we're taking up the story of Yosef's interpretation of the dreams of Pharaoh. Just to set it up, in terms of background, we already have been introduced to the fact that Yosef has a specific skill, his knowledge of interpreting dreams. We first saw that in with regard to his own dreams, the dreams that he had had when he was 17 years old. The ones about the bundles, the brothers surrounding his, and then the sun and the moon and the stars, which, as I've explained, clearly, he didn't regard them as ordinary dreams. That was the whole issue of the contention between Yosef and the brothers, that Yosef was claiming that these were prophetic dreams. This was really a communication from God as to what the future would be, specifically that he would be the leader, and that was the whole problem. That was the main cause of the conclusion that the brothers reached, the harsh action that they felt they had to take, was because they did not regard his prophecy, and it says they hated him for his dreams and his words, meaning that they looked at him as having serious ego problems, tremendous desire for power, which in and of itself wouldn't be such a problem, except for the fact that he had convinced himself, as I pointed out, many visionaries throughout history were people who had powerful ambitions, and they were so powerful that they caused them to have certain visions which they themselves believed were inspired, that they were prophetic, and so forth. So a person that has that kind of an attitude, who is convinced that his own inner desires and ambitions are objective reality to the extent that it forms the basis of some type of a vision or a dream, which he then interprets to be prophetic, is an extremely dangerous person because there's nothing that's going to stop him. And that's basically how the brothers viewed Yosef. That's what they said. Behold, the dreamer is coming, and let us action against him, and we'll see what will become of his dream. Anyway, you see, from all of this, after all is said and done, finally it came out that Yosef was correct, that this was not an expression of his own psyche. He was essentially a perfected individual, and it was usefulness. He did make mistakes. It wasn't the correct thing to do to communicate this to the brothers at that point in time. So he made mistakes, but nevertheless, essentially he was a perfected individual. And these dreams, indeed, as we see, did become prophecies. But true, but prophetic. Next time we see Yosef's ability to interpret dreams is in the prison with the butler and the baker. And he successfully interprets their dreams. And in this situation, he attempts to utilize it to get himself out of prison. He appeals to the butler. And when you read it, it's a little bit troubling, because it seems that it wouldn't be such a difficult thing for the butler to do. He appeals to him to remember him. And he's going to be restored to his position in 3 days. He appeals to Yosef, appeals to him to remember him for Paro. Then he tells him because he was kidnapped when he was young, and he starts to tell him a little bit, perhaps, too much of his trouble. At all events, that leads to nothing. Nothing comes of it, because the butler is restored, and we can learn a significant lesson that don't put your faith in people, don't put your trust in people. Although, it doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves, and sometimes you do have a connection which can be of help to you, and of course a person has to use intelligence. I'm not saying you shouldn't use people in order to achieve objectives, but apparently there was an element of putting too much trust in an individual. You can't put too much trust in an individual. And no matter how, especially if it's based upon that person's sense of gratitude. Gratitude is not something which is found too frequently. And it says, Lo zachatar mashkim es Yosef. Interesting, it's on the surface it seems to be perhaps repetitive. It says he didn't remember him, but yishkacheyu, and he forgot him, which seems to be pretty much the same thing. Is it redundant? Of course, if he didn't remember him, is that the same thing as forgetting him? I think it means that he himself had a bit of a conflict. It seems to me that the butler had given Yosef the impression that he would satisfy his request, that he would do him the favor. Because if he refused to do it in the first place, then there'd be no need for the Torah to point out that he forgot to do it, that he forgot about Yosef. If he never agreed to do this in the first place, it wouldn't have been an obligation. But apparently, at that moment in time, he was extremely happy. He liked what Yosef had to say. And Yosef's interpretation relieved a tremendous burden. It's also possible, as has been pointed out, that it actually helped him. Because there was a trial, there was an investigation of the butler and the baker. Both of them had committed some kind of a crime. And they were going through this process. And so even if you're innocent, it's not so simple. It doesn't always work out that the innocent goes free or the guilty is found guilty. A lot has to do with how you present yourself. And Ray Chay pointed this out, that he may have been afraid, that the butler may have had a lot of trepidation because he might have been the kind of person that didn't have enough self-confidence. Even if he was correct, even if he was innocent, there are a lot of people that can't make a good case for themselves. They're lacking in a certain type of confidence. And if he felt that the deck was stacked against him, even though he was innocent, that would have an effect upon the outcome. But apparently, Yosef's interpretation that he'd be found innocent and so forth gave him a certain confidence. So he was happy. And in my opinion, he agreed. But Yosef really wasn't asking for this for all that much. But when he left the prison, apparently he had a conflict as to whether he should go ahead with this, whether he should honor Yosef's request and remember him to Pharaoh. So at first, when a person has a conflict, so the first reaction is the lo zachar, he didn't remember. Didn't remember means he had excuses, these other things are more important right now. He's first getting out, let me get back to my situation. This is not the right time. That's the way the psyche works. When you don't want to do something, but at the same time, you feel guilty. You don't want to say you're not going to do it. I told them I was going to do them a favor. So the way the psyche works is you just put it aside. You find excuses. I can't deal with it right now. I'm sure you've all had that experience. If you don't put it in the, you can put it in the to-do bin, but not to do today. Maybe tomorrow. But you don't realize that is, sometimes that's the first step in the decision not to do it at all. And then a few days go by, and of course other things come up. You're unlikely to come back to it later. The time to do a painful task is pretty much when it's compelling. Do it now. The time to pay for a purchase that may be a little bit of a luxury, maybe more than you want to spend, and so forth, you're in conflict. The time when you're buying it, that's the time to pay it. But then you have the desire to have the object, and you know you have to pay for it. Very often people put things on credit, and it makes it easier because you can get past the situation, I don't have to worry about it. But then, a few weeks later, and you no longer have excitement of getting the object, now it just becomes a nuisance and you tend to put it aside. You tend to forget it. So that's Vayishkacheyu. You see that from the words Vayishkacheyu, and he forgot him, that is really helping us to understand the entire process, which begins with Velo Zachar, he didn't remember. He didn't deal with it at the time when he should have dealt with it. At that point in time, he still had some desire to help Yosef, but he had a conflict. On the other hand, he didn't want to create any kind of a problem for us. He didn't want to ask Paro for any kind of a favor at this point. So that was the point of conflict. To resolve the conflict, he simply put it aside. And then, as days went by, so the memory of Yosef and the whole idea of Yosef's favor and all of that begins to diminish. So the pressure to respond and do what you said you're going to do becomes less and less. And then eventually you totally forget about it. That's it. It becomes part of your history. So Yosef was destined to stay in jail for another 2 years. Now I want to take up today the manner in which Yosef was able to extricate himself from jail. As we know, it had to do again with dreams. That's a very popular dream in the whole story of Yosef. And here too, Paro has dreams. This time Paro has dreams. And circumstances were brought about, providential circumstances, which would lead to it in point of fact that the butler eventually did remember. He did remember eventually. Not because he cared about Yosef, not because he wanted to fulfill his obligation, but because it was fortuitous for his own purposes. So Paro had these dreams, which the Torah records from. Got the seven cows, the seven goodly cows, the fat cows, and the seven thin cows. And the dream, of course, is duplicated. It expresses itself in two different metaphors. One is with the cows, the good cows and the sickly cows. And then Paro briefly awakens, he falls asleep again, but a continuation. It's the same theme, and now it's expressed through the ears of grain. Again, the first ones that come up are healthy and robust, and then they're followed by the sickly ones. And then you have the phenomenon of the swallowing. These are the basic elements, the seven sickly, thin ones, the swallow, the good ones. And Paro is very disturbed. So apparently it's a prophetic dream. We know it's a prophetic dream. We don't know at this point until Yosef actually is able to declare it as such. But it leaves a certain effect on the psyche of Paro. He's very disturbed. He has a certain vatipar rucho. And he was in a state of anxiety. He had to know. It portended something to him. He had to know the explanation of the dream. So what did he do? He calls all of his wise men. Chatumim Mitzrayim v'yaskol chachamel. The Chatumim are those who were versed in these arts of divination or interpretation, whatever it is. And all of the wise men. And he tells them the dream, and it says, the ain't poser osam laparo. And there was no one who could interpret it for Paro. That's interesting. It should have said that there was nobody who could interpret it. But the pasuk indicates that that's not exactly the case. They couldn't interpret it for Paro means, according to Rashi, that they offered interpretations. We'll soon see in what way their interpretations different from Yosef's interpretation. But it wasn't satisfactory to Paro. So that the interpretation didn't clear up the doubt, the anxiety, the confusion that he had about the dream. It didn't ring true with Paro. Then, of course, the butler, the Sar Mashkim, enters into the picture. And now, he has a great opportunity to fulfill the pledge he had made to Yosef. Then he recounts the story that happened, him and the baker, and the fact that they both had this dream, and then he tells him about Yosef. Seems in a bit of a disparaging way. It was there with us a Nar Ivri. Nar is a disparaging term of youth, a kid, this Jewish kid, who was a servant to the chief of the butchers. And we told it to him, and he interpreted our dreams, each one in accordance with his dream. The interpretation was accurate in every way. And it came true exactly as he predicted. I was returned to my position, and the other individual was hung. I said, this recounting of what took place has an effect on Paro. Paro apparently is a bit desperate at this point in time. No one has been able to satisfy him, and he has a need to know. He has a pressing need to know the interpretation of the dream. So now Yosef has his opportunity. Now, in approaching this, it's important to realize, it seems to me that it's pretty obvious, that Yosef is going to be extremely careful. That Yosef recognizes that he has a special opportunity over here. All right, it's one thing to interpret Paro's dream. I assume he would have done it even if he hadn't been in jail, or even if he hadn't expected any reward. That's the kind of person that Yosef was. And if it was possible for him to share the knowledge, and it wasn't just a matter of sharing the knowledge, as you see, the conversations with Paro, is he's trying to elevate Paro to a higher knowledge of God. They had a brief conversation, and he does communicate. The Torah, by the way, doesn't record every aspect of the conversation. It just mentions briefly that when Paro says, I've heard about you, that you hear a dream, you know how to interpret it, and Yosef says, not from me, but the God will provide an answer to the satisfaction of Pharaoh. So he's very humble. He's telling you about God. It doesn't mean that this is the full extent of the conversation. It's just mentioning the highlight of the conversation, that Yosef was trying to communicate an idea to him, that all the wisdom that he has is not something that comes from some innate type of a magical power, but that it's because God implants wisdom in the creation, and God gives mankind the capacity to obtain wisdom. And when a person reaches a very advanced state of wisdom, he can gain insight into the realm of divine communication, of prophecy. So there's a phenomenon of prophecy in the prophetic dream. And the person who has this special kind of wisdom, which he gets from God, can utilize it, and so forth. But he's taking a very humble approach, and indeed, you'll see later on, after Paro hears the interpretation, which he's extremely excited about, very satisfied with, Yosef did the trick, but he does refer to Yosef as someone who, after God has shown you, after God has given you access to all of this, there's no one as wise as discerning in you. So there's no question that Yosef had an influence on Pharaoh in terms of his notion of God and how God relates to people and so forth. So I'm saying that Yosef probably would have interpreted the dream anyway. But given that he was in jail and obviously he wanted to get out, now he had a second chance. The first chance had been with the butler, but it hadn't worked. It had failed. It did work in an indirect way, but yeah, it's being pointed out that it did work. It's true, it worked in an indirect way, but not the manner that Yosef thought. It didn't work as a result of the fact that Yosef's plan was successful in his intention. Yosef's intention was to elicit that favor. He thought, he was mistaken, the calculus. He thought that after what he had done, and the way he framed the request, he'd get a response. And he was wrong. And had God not intervened with the dream, had God not communicated the dream to Paro, then Yosef would still have been in jail, as far as that's concerned. It required something else. However, God did see fit to communicate the dream to Paro, and then the butler remembered, because that was in the best interest of the butler. Be the one who provided him with the answer. Now, my premise is that Yosef entered this situation very, very carefully, determined to do the best that he could do, to make the proper impression on Paro. He would not want to make mistakes. He wouldn't want to mess it up. The pasuk does indicate, there's one pasuk that indicates that Yosef was approaching this with great care. What pasuk might that be? Those of you who have a chumash in front of you? Yes, very good. Yes, Ilana has the answer. It does point out something. You take a look at chapter 41, verse 15, actually it's 14, which tells us that Paro, bear in mind that the Torah does not record information that's not necessary. Whatever the Torah does record about a detail, he did this, he did that, the Torah is not interested in history, the way we read history, all the specifics. So it's telling us in this verse that they removed Yosef from the pit, and it says, and he shaved, and he changed his garment, he changed his clothing, and he came to Paro. Now that's seemingly a trivial piece of information, which you might not even find in today's kinds of history books. What do I need to know that for? So it seemed to me that this was a result of Yosef's decision, that Yosef decided to do this. And why did Yosef decide to do this? Because he did not want to come to Paro in the wrong type of a state, in an unkempt state, not to dress properly. He wanted to make a certain impression, if he could. Now, let's see what happens, because it seems to me that if we study Yosef's interpretation, how Yosef behaved, interacted with Paro, there's a major question. So let's take a look at the Chumash now, see if you can describe what I'm talking about. What is the problem over here? In everything, you can take a look at everything that Yosef then assessed to Paro. Paro now recounts the dream. So the Torah has told us the dream as it unfolds. Now we're getting it through Paro's recounting. There's certain additions, certain changes that Paro mentions over here in the recounting. Now, Paro's recounting ends at 28, verse 28. We're in chapter 41. Verse 28. In verse 28, Yosef begins the interpretation. So if everybody would please scan, go through Yosef's interpretation. I'm not going to read the entire thing over here. The interpretation begins on 41. 25, verse 25. And where does it end? It ends at verse 37. So from 25 to 37, you have Yosef's response. Let's call it his response. If you take a look at the response, it seems to me it can be broken down into two parts. Two distinct part. Okay? From 25 to 33 would be part one. And what exactly is that? How would you characterize that? Well, he launches into dream interpretation. And very methodical. Added, you can see the method. He starts off by explaining the symbols. The dream, obviously, is using symbols, symbolism. You have the seven cows, you have the seven good cows, you have the seven sickly cows. The seven good ears of grain and the seven sickly ones. So you have to explain what a seven stands for. What do the cows, what do the good cows stand for, the seven good cows, and so forth. So that's how he does it, very systematically. And the seven, we all know, the seven good cows, these are the 7 years of prosperity. And he tells him that, he keeps repeating this point, 28, this is what I told you, Paro, that which God is going to do, he has indicated, he's shown to Paro. He tells him that God is revealing the future, the Paro. And then he explains the significance, because there's two elements in the dream. The first element is the symbol, what the symbol stands for. But now you know what the symbol stands for, but that's not sufficient. Then you have, what's going to happen? And then he proceeds to explain what's going to happen. That's in 29. Behold, 7 years are coming, there'll be a great prosperity, abundance, years of plenty. Then, the 7 years of famine will come, and they're going to be consecutively after the seven years of abundance, they're going to have 7 years of famine. And all of the abundance will be forgotten in the land, and the famine will destroy the land. And the abundance will not be known in the land because of the famine that's going to come after it. For it'll be exceedingly severe. Then there's one other thing that Yosef has to explain. So now Yosef pretty much has explained the dream. 7 good years, followed by 7 bad years, and which all of the abundance will be forgotten. Then there's one more thing he has to explain. That is the repetition, the Alishano. That is why the dream of the stork just seems to be duplicating the dream of the cow. He says that there's a reason for that too, that the repetition of the phenomena in a prophetic dream indicates that it's set, it's determined, and that it's going to happen soon. It's not, there are certain things that pertain to the distant future, and there are certain things that are going to happen immediately. So that's what he says. But when Meir Elohim Lasoso, God is going to bring it about quickly. Now, on your own, please take a look. This is the end of part one, in my opinion, of Yosef's response. Take a look at part two. It's not that long. Part two of the response begins on verse 33. And it's about 5 sentences. Verse 33. Yeah. Let me just read briefly. I'll read from the translation, the Art Scroll translation. Now, without even a break, without even a pause or hesitation, he says, "Now let Paro seek out a discerning and wise person and set him up over the land of Egypt, and give him the power to appoint assistants, overseers of the land, and to prepare the land of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. And let them gather all the food of those approaching good years. Let them amass grain under Potiphar's authority for food in the cities and safeguard it. The food will be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine, which will befall the land, so that the land will not perish in the famine." That's the end of his response. Then it goes on to tell us that his words were very good, everybody was happy, the matter appeared very well in the eyes of Paro and the eyes of all of the servants. And so on and so forth. Then we know what happens next, that lo and behold, Paro decides that he is exactly the kind of person. The kind of person Yosef is describing over here, who is that person? Yosef. So now that's it. Yosef has tremendous success. Not only is he able to get himself removed from jail, but he's appointed to the highest position of power. That's something else. But as we study the response of Yosef, there's something which, in my opinion, requires an explanation. Something which is unanticipated, which I wouldn't have anticipated. And for me, anyway, as I'll explain, constitutes a problem. What is that? Yeah. Right, yeah. We may have done this before, but I have some things to add. Okay, yeah. It seems that the interpretation of the dream comes to an end when he gets up to verse 33. That's what he was called to do. He was not called to give advice. What follows after this seems to be something which is gratuitous, which is unsolicited, which is unnecessary, and which could become a tremendous problem. Because there is a certain protocol that you have to observe when you're dealing with people in power. And that's true even today, but certainly in ancient times when the kings had much greater authority and a person was expected to behave appropriately, this could be a very dangerous thing. That is, what right did Yosef have to start giving advice to the king, telling him what to do? It just doesn't make any sense on any level. because Pharaoh was dumbfounded in terms of the meaning of the dream. He didn't know what the dream meant. So now, all right, Yosef has the ability to decipher it. So you, what's your mission? What's your agenda? So come in and explain the dream. Now, once he does that, it's up to Pharaoh to decide. I mean, Pharaoh had servants, he had wise men, he had a government, he had ministers. So it's up to them to decide what to do with it and how to proceed. Of course, if he's interested in Yosef's opinion, he would have asked for his opinion. But wasn't it brash? Wasn't it risky? Wasn't it inappropriate of Yosef to simply launch into advice at that point in time? Now, if he felt that he had something that was so unique, we also want to study what's so unique about his advice, what's so special about his advice. You have to assume that there's something very important over here. But even if there is something important over here, it doesn't mean he had the right to do it. Was he taking a chance?
What's the downside?
The downside is that if you're in a situation where you're at the mercy of these powerful people. This is an age when the king had absolute power. And you didn't have a Bill of Rights protecting. You didn't have lawyers. You didn't have all this protocol like today, where the rights of the individual, even the rights of criminals, has increased tremendously. So, and Yosef is a stranger. He's a foreigner. He's not even a citizen of Egypt. He's a Jewish kid. And the Egyptians basically, the things they didn't like the Jews too much, even at that time. So, why would you want to do something that could have a negative effect? What's the gain? What the downside is that they could be insulted.
And what? He's in jail already.
That's the point. He's in jail already. Now you have an opportunity. You'll get sent right back to jail. What is the gain? That's the big downside. What's the upside, I would say? What is the upside in doing this? What is the gain?
Wait, but didn't they...
Tell me, if you're going to tell me that there was something very important about this advice. Something hidden. Something he had. Why didn't he at least ask for permission? That's something which would make sense. That is to say, if you were called to the White House to offer advice on a specific area of expertise that you may have about something, that's all they want. They want to, as I gave an example. For example, let's say you're a great meteorologist. They want to know weather conditions in Afghanistan 2 weeks from now because of some operation. So you give your explanation of what you think. Then you suddenly start giving military advice, which is not your area of expertise. So people will find it offensive. That's arrogant. That's empty. You're taking a risk. They may like you. They may admire your spunk. That's true. But why take the risk? If you feel that you have something special to offer, then at least ask permission. What do you have to lose by asking permission? That's all I'm saying. So Yosef has a lot to lose, because when you put yourself in a position, you have an opportunity, you're struggling in some kind of a field, in some business or whatever it is, in some profession, and you get an opportunity, some head of a major company has heard about you, about a specialty of yours, which for whatever reason is of importance to them. You're getting an interview now, and they're going to question you about your discovery. Not because they want to give you a job or anything, because they want to make use of your insight. But you have a different agenda. You would like to become part of that team, which is not what they're calling you for. So wouldn't you play it very carefully? Wouldn't you want to indicate to them that you're respectful of them, that you have all the other qualities? So if you're going to make a bold move, at least do it in a way which you minimize your risk. It seems to me that Yosef had already scored big, so to speak, just by his ability to interpret the dream. Puts him in a completely different position.
You ready?
Yeah.
A couple of individuals have a question regarding Jacob is suggesting that he's...
Jacob?
Yeah, Jacob is here. He joined us today. He's saying that I can only tell you what God tells me. Yosef says to Paro, Biladai Hashem, right? He says only what, but God will interpret your dream. So was this saying that Joseph, that Yosef was having a, he had a prophecy of some sort?
No, no, that's not the case. If you take a look at Rashi explains it to mean that this wisdom that I have doesn't come from me, which means to say that he's differentiating himself from Paro's. Magicians and so on and so forth, all of these people were mystics. And they tried to give the impression that they had a special power. It comes from them. Yosef was saying, I'm just working with wisdom. Wisdom doesn't come from me. Wisdom comes from God. But God created the world in such a way that if you study it, and he gave man a certain faculty, that if he uses it properly, he can gain access to God's wisdom. But we always regard wisdom as something which comes from God. Questions being raised, what does Yosef mean when he said it's not from me, it's from God? He did not mean that what he is going to say now is going to be the result of a prophecy from God. There's no indication that Yosef receives a prophecy from God. Indeed, if that were the case, I wouldn't be asking my question. Because if Yosef's response was scripted because he got a prophecy from God, so what am I asking a question for? So if God told him to tell Paro to appoint a wise and discerning man, then of course Yosef is going to say it. Yosef is using his wisdom. And that's what he wanted to tell Paro. That's something which is extremely humble. He's humble. He's not claiming that he has any special powers. I have something which everybody has access to. Everybody has access to wisdom. The only thing is that some people work on it a little bit harder. Some people access it. But it's something which is available to everybody. So it's not something that you should take credit for. Or boast about, which is in contradistinction to the other enchanters and the mystics who seek to convey an impression that they're special and unique, that they have special powers that nobody else has. Now, I'm going to get back to my theme over here, that part two seems superficially to be Yosef giving advice. And I want to make it clear why this is a question. Because Yosef is operating with wisdom. And if so, why didn't he quit while he was ahead? If Paro then asks him, do you have any advice for us? Fine, he could respond then. If for whatever reason he feels he must convey this advice, why doesn't he ask for permission? Let's say he asks for permission, and Paro says, no, I want to discuss it with my own advice. So you mean to say Yosef would insist on telling it to him anyway? So the question that I'm raising is, was this as a peer? A deviation from what he ought to be doing? Did Yosef suddenly make a mistake? He could say he made a mistake, even though it's not going to bother people too much, because in the end, it seems to work out very well. Paro was very pleased. Paro was very, very happy with him. And Paro does not rebuke him and say, excuse me, I didn't ask for your advice. So most people, if it worked out well in the end, that's enough for most people. But not for me, because I want to see the wisdom that Yosef was operating with. Just because something works out, it doesn't mean it was the right thing to do. Sometimes we make mistakes, and somebody chides you and says, you know, you said the wrong thing at the meeting. And they say, yeah, well, look, it worked, it was great, he was happy with it. Yeah, doesn't you're lucky, you got away with it this time. But you should take note, what you did was the wrong thing, and this time you were lucky. So a person, if somebody else criticizes you on something, you should you think about whether it makes sense or not. You shouldn't base your reaction on whether it worked or didn't work. Sometimes you do the right thing, by the way. Sometimes you'll do the right thing and it didn't work out. Sometimes it was the appropriate thing to say. You said the right thing, but the other person didn't want to hear it or wasn't in the right mood and it didn't work. It doesn't mean that you were wrong for saying it. You got to judge something in terms of whether it makes sense to do it or not. That's my question as far as Yosef is concerned. That's what I want to address myself to for the remainder of this year. The advice of Yosef, why Yosef was completely correct in doing it, and what we can learn from that advice. I'm sorry, Ilana? Not even a breather, right?
No,
good point. Very good. Very good. Excellent. Yeah. It is, exactly. Good. That's a good point. Yeah, it seems that Yosef is not even taking a breather, as is being pointed out. It's not as if he's saying, okay, that's part one. This is the meaning of the dream. Now let me proceed to part two. It's all a seamless continuation. It all seems to be one thing. It seems to be legitimate in terms of what Paro asked him to do. To interpret the dream, it seems the way Yosef is doing it, that this is a legitimate continuation of the interpretation of the dream. Let's see how that works.
Dude, I'm raising my hand.
Oh, I can't. All right. Okay.
Loud, so?
You're allowed to raise your hand, but just, you know, wait until somebody notices. Sarah, go ahead. Do you have an answer?
Yeah, I do.
Can you just wait one more question? Let me just set it up.
Want to answer?
I just want to make one more comment, then I'll go to you, okay?
Me first?
Hang on, I'll go to you first.
Okay.
There's something else I think that should grab our attention. There seems to be a bit of a, if you don't want to use the word contradiction, a disconnect between the interpretation of the dream and the advice that Joseph gives. Does anybody have any idea what I'm talking about? The advice that Yosef gives does not, at first glance, flow smoothly from the interpretation of the dream. So let's take a look at the interpretation of the dream.
They're supposed to suffer from the famine.
They're supposed to, right. You know, if you were to characterize the dream, the interpretation, how would you explain it? Is it a good thing? Is it a terrible thing? Is it an evil thing? And Paro obviously was concerned. The reason why he was concerned is because he says that this is a sign of something major is going to happen. He didn't know. He didn't know whether it's going to be good. He didn't know whether it's going to be bad. Let's take a look at the interpretation. You get a completely different impression. A different sense from Yosef's interpretation, and then from his advice. So let's go back to the interpretation, briefly. As we said before, you have the 7 years of prosperity, abundance, followed by 7 years of famine. But you have to interpret one more thing. What is the significance of the swallowing? That too has to be explained. Because in both dreams it says the seven sickly cows will swallow the seven fat cows. The seven sickly stalks will swallow. What is the meaning of the swallowing? Yosef interprets that. And Yosef's interpretation leads to a prognosis, leads to a conclusion of gloom, doom, absolute, unmitigated disaster. Because superficially, it seems like it's a wash. All right, you have seven great years and you have seven terrible years. So most people would say at the end, you start out, you know, you where you started out. You have tremendous gain and you lose your gain. Okay, no one would be happy about that. You can have 7 years of success, tremendous profit. Then you have 7 years of tremendous loss. So one way is, all right, after all said and done, I didn't lose. I started right now where I started out. Is that the case? If that's the case, it wouldn't be the worst tragedy. Because pretty much you're saying that all the profits you made in the seven good years, all those profits you're going to lose in the seven bad years. All right, so that's not the worst tragedy. It means it's a letdown. Because once a person makes money, makes a profit, he doesn't want to lose it. But if you know to begin with, that it's just temporary, you can lose all your profits, so it won't be devastating. But is that basically what Yosef, is that the significance? No. Because the dream is not simply said, that would be the case if you had the seven fat cows followed by the seven good cows. Followed by the seven sickly cows. But there's something else that has to explain, there's the swallowing. The swallowing is very, very meaningful, very, very significant. What is the swallowing telling you? Are these two sets of years, are they of equal strength? No. Now, of the two, the really significant ones are the 7 years of famine. They're much, much more powerful. It's not going to be that the abundance is going to be so great, and it's going to be enough. It'll get you through the years of famine, and it'll use it up. That's not the case. Take a look at what Parah said, and Yosef's interpretation. Take a look at 41, verse 20. It says that the sin and the sickly cows ate the first seven, the healthy ones, and they came inside of them. Parah was describing this. This is what Parah saw. You'd expect when a thin cow swallows a bit, this could happen in a dream, obviously. When you dream of a thin cow swallowing a fat one, then its belly should expand. He says, but it wasn't visible. It wasn't apparent that they had come inside of them, because their appearance remained just as bad as it was. So that's a horrifying thing. That's something which is strange. Nothing changed. Now, what is the interpretation? What did Yosef take that to mean in his interpretation? This is expressed by Yosef in verses 30. After he says that 7 years of abundance are coming, then he says that the 7 years of famine will arise after them. V'nishkach kol ha'sava b'yaretz Mitzrayim. And all the abundance will be completely forgotten. It'll be completely wiped out. There'll be no sign of it. That's the significance of the fact that the seven fat cows were not visible inside of the seven sick cows. The seven sick cows are the years of famine. V'chila ha'ravas ha'aretz. And the famine is going to destroy them. It's going to destroy everything. So it's not the case where it's going to be a wash. You break even. The famine is going to be overwhelmingly more powerful than the abundance, and it's going to wipe it out. And the abundance will not be apparent, won't be visible, will be unknown in the land because of the famine that will come afterwards. Because it'll be extremely severe. So it seems that the way Yosef is presenting it is a prophecy of gloom and doom. It seems to be a situation of utter devastation. That the 7 good years are just not going to be enough. And there'll be no memory of it. Basically, what you can have after all is said and done is 7 sickly cows, 7 sickly storks. The land of Egypt, maybe it'll survive, but it'll survive like 7 sickly cows. So it's going to be a diminished stature. This, if you stop at this point in time, what kind of dream is it? Never mind the particulars. What's the outcome? What do I have to look forward to? You have to look forward to a tremendous devastation. It's basically, it would be akin to saying that a mighty superpower, something like the United States or whatever it is, will go through a period of years, maybe some good years first, then years of devastation, and 35 years from now, it'll be like barely alive. It'll be like a nothing, like a life on its deathbed. That's pretty much what it seems to be saying. But that doesn't seem to be in accordance with the very cheerful prognostication, the cheerful advice that he's giving him. Okay, I'm going to pause there. Sarah, you're on. Sarah, I see your hand raised.
First of all, in answer to Alana's remark about him not taking a breath, you even said at the beginning that he prepared himself very well before he went. So he already knew what his response, that he was going to have a response, because this was his shot.
Hold it a second. One second. But when you say that before he left the jail, he didn't know what he would respond. He didn't even know what the dream would be.
But he was prepared.
No, he didn't know the dream until he heard it. He didn't have any prophecy on this. Good.
Didn't he know that this was an opening for him? Like, this was a shot for him.
Yeah, this is a shot for him. There's no question about that.
Well, my thing about that is that when he gave him his advice, which you think that he, when he gave him what he thought he should do, which you think he should have done,
I'm at this point in time, I'm raising a question.
So I'm just, let's say he didn't. Let's say he didn't. He would have gone back to jail, right? But when else was he going to have a chance to possibly, whatever he was going for, to get out of jail? When he had the shot, he would have gone back to jail. That would have been the end of it.
No, what I'm saying is as follows. You know, I don't think you understand my question. Is that he had an opportunity to impress Barrow by interpreting the stream correctly, convince Barrow that this was the correct interpretation. Now, if he did that appropriately and he acted appropriately, so this would open up the door to have a new hearing. Barrow would be favorably disposed. Either he'd be so impressed that he'd want to keep him on his staff of dream interpreters, but you see, he had different people we called it, or at the very least, as a reward for what he did, he would spring him, he'd give him a hearing. I mean, you know, Yosef had no clue that he was leaving jail to go on to become the leader of the land. He had no clue. So you have to put yourself in Yosef's position. What would be realistic? Be realistic if he's got an opportunity and he impresses Barrow and that gives him a hearing. Maybe he'll show some mercy to me. I'll be able to explain that I didn't commit a crime here, and maybe he'll just let me free. So that's why I'm saying you don't want to do anything negative. My question is based upon the fact that why would he spoil the good impression by suddenly doing something trash? In other words, you call him, going back to my question, you call him a chutzpah. Who asked you to give advice? He's got all these powerful advisors over there. It's an insult to them, by the way. It's insulting to them. That is the basis of my question. What I want to show you how is why it wasn't insulting. It's the contrary. He had every right to do it. He was acting with great wisdom. Okay? Now, anybody have any thoughts as to what, how would you go from here?
Rabbi?
Yes.
A thought that I have about it is this dream is pretty devastating.
Devastating dream, exactly.
And, especially a king in a powerful position, he's left him sort of in a devastated position, so he has to empower him in a sense. Otherwise, leaving somebody in a devastated position might make him angry.
Yeah, I know. That's true. That's a good point. He didn't want to leave him that way.
So he has
you got to be very careful how you go about doing these things. I hear your point. It's a good point, Carol's making.
It's kind of like, you know, when somebody says, I have good news and bad news?
Right.
And so it seems like he could say, well, this is the bad news, but I have good news that goes along with it.
Yeah, but I think you went a little bit further. Yeah, okay, if you have good news. I think we're on the same track. All I'm saying is this, though, that you need something more than that, because he is, according to what you're saying, he didn't want Barr to feel bad. But he is risking a breach. He's risking a breach in protocol. What he could have done was, you know, to ask permission. To give, you know, to say something. If I have permission, if I may take the liberty to say something to Pharaoh, which he might find interesting. That's all I'm saying. What I want to show is that there was no need for that, and that Yosef was not doing anything inappropriate, and that he was acting within the mandate. That's what I want to show you. In about a minute. So, Jesse, do you want to say something? Okay, good. Irina? Yeah, okay. What I want to say is, in my opinion, this is not a clear case of advice. This is not something which was unconnected to the dream interpretation. Yosef was brought in to interpret the dream, and in my opinion, at this point in time, the complete interpretation had not been given. And we raised the question that if you take a look at part two, the advice he's telling Power to do, and so on and so forth, it's very upbeat. It seems to be very, very upbeat. And the net effect on Power was that Power was very excited. Yet the dream is one of disaster. Bloom and doom. What is it? Rashi mentions, he says that there was none who could interpret it for Pharaoh. He says that his magicians would give interpretations, but they didn't satisfy Pharaoh. And he gives examples. For example, they would say that the seven fat cows represent seven daughters. You're going to have seven daughters. And the seven sickly cows means they're all going to die. That type of thing. So you see that they were operating with a certain approach. And this is an interesting question. If a person has a dream, and let's assume that we know that it's a prophetic dream, then you would think that God is telling you the future. This is the way it has to be. It's, so to speak, a fatalistic phenomenon. It's a done deal. It's a foregone conclusion. Now, if you are listening to the dream in that way, and put yourself in the mind of Paro, and that's basically, you want to know, what Paro wants to know is what's going to happen in the end, what's going to be the outcome. If you look at the dream that way, then the outcome is gloom and doom. And there's nothing you can do about it. If you look at the dream, the prophecy, as being something which is immutable, which can't be changed, this is the future. The future is that the 7 years of famine are going to consume everything, and you'll survive, but you're going to look like a survivor. Pretty much like a concentration camp survivor. That's what you're going to look like. That's what the country, that's the state of the country. So then there's nothing that can be done about it. Is that correct? Is that the truth? Is that the way it's working? Here's where Yosef wants to tell him that you have to understand how a dream works, what the Jewish interpretation, the Jewish understanding is. And that is that God, there's two outcomes to this dream. There are two interpretations. There are two outcomes to this dream. God is showing you the future. He's giving you a window, an opening into what is going to happen. The natural causes. These are the natural causes. The natural causes are there's going to be 7 years of abundance, followed by 7 years of a severe famine, which in terms of its severity, left unchecked, things as they are, will wipe out everything. And if there was nobody that had any advance notice of this, if you just had to go through this experience without any kind of advance notice or preparation, you would emerge as a survivor. But it's not immutable. We are not fatalists. That's not the way God relates to us. God gave man a faculty which enables him to overcome the natural forces. And that's the message of the dream. This is still the message of the dream. God's communicating something to you. The message of the dream is that if you study the situation very, very carefully, you take all of this phenomena and you study it and you analyze it, you'll recognize that within the 7 years of abundance, there lies the ability not just to sustain, not just to thwart off destruction, but it's a possibility for a tremendous new enterprise, and not only will you not be destroyed, but you will reach heights of wealth and power that Egypt never had before. That's what God is telling you. That's a legitimate continuation of the interpretation of the dream. The dream is more than just a symbol. It's more than just the swallowing. It is a message from God. And the message is that there is a tremendous opportunity if you do the following things. This is what you must do. But this is what you must do. That's what God is telling you. This is not my own advice. This is a legitimate continuation of the interpretation of the dream. And had he stopped at that point, then the interpretation would have been false. It would have given Pharaoh the impression that everything has been decreed and that there's nothing that can be done. That's it. You're finished. To the contrary, he would have been devastated. Pharaoh would have been devastated. He would have been put into a framework of someone who was completely defeated. Yosef told him that this is not defeat. That there is a opportunity over here, a tremendous opportunity. And that's how God relates to us. That there's natural circumstances. The natural circumstances can, at first glance, be very, very challenging, can create all kinds of problems. But man has the ability to overcome. Man has the ability, especially when you have this gift. When God has given you this insider information, you have this foresight, you have this advanced knowledge, it all depends. What's the other outcome? There's two outcomes. There's the natural outcome, nature left to its own devices. Then there's the outcome that can be people that are not devastated, that are not paralyzed, that retain their sense of calm, and they know how to analyze the situation and bring to bear tremendous discipline, tremendous wisdom. They can take the same set of circumstances, the same situation, and not only will they not be destroyed, but they can turn it around into a great opportunity. That's what he's explaining to him. Let's go specifically now. Yeah, Jess. Yeah. Yeah, Godzilla Delva, that's a good point. Yeah. Thing pointed out that the story of Nacham Ish Gamzu. Gamzu means this too. Even though he say this also will be for the good. And the Gemara brings down certain stories about him. He's kind of an individual that when he found himself in very difficult situations, when it appeared that all hope was gone, nevertheless, he retained a certain kind of an attitude. He wasn't devastated by it, and he was able to find some way to extricate himself, to work it out. That's along the line, same idea pretty much. It's also very similar to the idea, and Rabbi Chaid explained this recently when he went into the dream of the butler and the baker, that the Gemara says that everything goes according to the Pisra. Everything goes according to the interpretation of the dream, which is hard to understand. Why would everything follow the interpretation? But he meant to say that a person's mental attitude to a certain phenomena has a tremendous effect. This is a very important point. The point that I'm making, that Judaism rejects fatalism, is of great significance in virtually every area of life. The extent to which people defeat themselves, participate in defeating themselves, because they enter into a situation with a certain sense, a certain lack of confidence, and a certain sense that they're not going to be successful, as opposed to other people who, for whatever reason, don't have that insecurity about themselves, a certain confidence in what they're doing. Now, confidence in and of itself can only take you so far, obviously. You have to have intelligence as well, yes. There are certain limits. There are certain situations which are impossible situations. We're not saying no. But to a large extent, what's significant in terms of how a person lives their life is the attitude you bring to a situation. If you're convinced that you're going to fail, then that's going to have a very, very prejudicial impact. On the other hand, a realistic sense of confidence about a situation. So when things go wrong, you'll see certain people panic immediately. If it doesn't work out according to how you anticipated it, about how you wanted it, and it brings out certain insecurities, if things go wrong, you'll see there are certain people that are going to give up. And there are other people that don't give up. And they hang in there. And they calm down. And they accept the situation. They begin to analyze the situation. Once you analyze it, there's many hidden things in the situation. No situation is ever that simple. Not that simple. Life is not that simplistic. Simply good. Some people go inside, this is great. You have a new job, a new neighborhood, a new situation, this is great. But then you find out that a lot of things you aren't looking at that aren't so great. And the same is true with the negative. Let's take a look now at what he says to them.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there anything in the dream that told him that he could change the outcome? Because he has the two dreams, and he told him that God is telling him that this is that it's already set.
No, what's that? No. What he means, what Yosef means when he says that it's set, that it's set, means in terms of the natural factors. This is it. This is what's going to happen in terms of the natural causes. However, to work with the natural causes, to take the 7 years of abundance and to work it out, in a way that it can lead to, as I said, a tremendous new chapter, a positive thing. That's not set. The outcome is not set. Just the forces of nature have been set. The outcome can't be set because it has to do with the interaction of people. And people have the ability. You see, man has this this is the whole idea of modern science. A man, by unlocking the secrets of nature, can bring about the most tremendous transformation. Let's take a look at the advice. And what does he say? Now let Paro seek out. Now this is important. Navam v'chacham, a wise and discerning person. And appoint them over the land of Egypt. I want to see what lessons we can learn that apply to our own time. Specifically, for example, this is a unique challenge. This is something major, it's unique, it's probably unprecedented. It's unlikely that Paro ever had to face this kind of thing before. There's no indication that this was very unusual. In general, Egypt was an abundant land. It was a prosperous land, agriculturally, because of the Nile. So this is something which is unique. To prepare the country to do all the different tasks, everything that had to be done, can break down into many, many different areas. Now, I have in mind, you can understand, you can appreciate Yosef's advice in light of what's been happening in our country in recent years. The whole 9/11 commission, trying to find out what the causes were, the breakdown in the intelligence, whether it was possible that we could have known about 9/11, or why didn't we know, why didn't we have better information. So I'm not going into a whole analysis of that, but by and large, one of the problems was that there was a tremendous division of different agencies. You had specialized agencies, the FBI, the CIA, and the fact that there were so many different agencies involved with different aspects, not to mention that it's not efficient. That's not the issue. That it's not efficient because of overlapping. But more important was that you didn't have the proper coordination. See, when you specialize and you break things down into separate compartments, there's a major problem over here. What's the problem? The problem is that you have to have one place where everything comes together, where it's coordinated. This person has one piece of the puzzle, the other one has another piece of the puzzle, he has a third piece of the puzzle. Each piece of the puzzle in and of itself is not enough. Now, if you have a computer, all the information can be fed into one central unit that puts it all together. That's how a computer works. But when you're dealing with agencies, you've got a big problem, because you're dealing with people. And once you're dealing with people, you're dealing with the human ego and prestige, and this one doesn't want to share, then there's jealousies and grudges and other issues. So that's a big problem. You got to deal with political factors. So now it's not just a question of getting the best intelligence, it's a question of coordination of information. Okay? Now, Yosef is communicating to Paro. The system here don't give you all the details. He's communicating to Paro that this is going to be a major operation. In order to take this and turn it into something positive, in order to turn this into a tremendous success, as I said, Egypt was going to be transformed. They were going to become the mightiest power, virtually, as a result of this famine, because bear in mind that the entire world, the famine was going to spread to the entire world. The prosperity is going to be only in Egypt. So Egypt has the opportunity. This involves tremendous agricultural knowledge. How to preserve the food, the produce, the seed, the tremendous knowledge, agricultural knowledge. Also political and organizational. Should there be central storage houses? For what types of things should there be centralized storage houses? For what types of things should the storages be in the very places, in those cities next to where the food is being grown and so forth? How do you organize this kind of thing? And then there's more to it. How do you distribute the food? Because there's got to be some kind of an equitable system. How do you distribute food during the 7 years of abundance? Because you're going to have to be saving a tremendous amount. And then how do you distribute it during the famine? And then how do you deal with all the international? There's a whole new situation, homeland security issues, currency issues, trade, because they're all going to be coming from all different parts of the world. They're going to come to Egypt to trade for food, so you have to have a barter system. All tremendous areas of knowledge. Now, what is Yosef saying? There's different ways you can approach this. The the average response would be different departments. You see, after 9/11, now they're trying to consolidate the departments. Homeland Security. An intelligence czar. Different czars, because you realize you have to have, if you have different subgroups, you have to have one person who's responsible for everything. But still isn't perfect. Because now, let's say you have Homeland Security has to communicate with the intelligence czar. You still have a breakdown. You still have a certain amount of division. To the extent that you have division, to that extent you've got problems. And the person at the top who has all of the power, and the person at the top who has all the responsibility, he himself doesn't have access. He has access, but he doesn't have direct links to the knowledge. What Yosef was telling him, you see that power created a special position for Yosef, which is unheard of. You see, he appointed, he does not make him into a minister. He makes him basically into someone who's just like Paro. He creates a new position. It's a second Paro. And he says, Raka kise ego mimeko. I'll be greater than you just by virtue of the throne. But all of the power will be vested in you. This is a response to what Yosef's idea is. Yosef is saying that you've got to create a special person and give him all of the power and the responsibility. But what is the unique feature of this person? What is unique about this person? And there's very few people that can qualify for this position. What is the unique feature? Of course, he has to be someone that he trusts. Yosef doesn't even mention that. That goes without saying.
But they have wisdom and insight.
Exactly. Chacham v'navon. Wisdom and navon is discernment. Discernment. In fact, Rabbi Kay pointed out that this is the way the Jewish nation is described. The Jewish nation has spes. Then when the Jews keep the Torah properly, as spes, with great wisdom and understanding of the meaning and the philosophy of the Torah, and the nations will hear about the Torah properly, with the philosophy, with the rationality, with the intelligence, then they will say what a rak am chacham v'navon, what a wise and discerning nation. Wisdom and discernment. Now, that has many implications, but it seems to me that there's a specific. There is a little bit of a difference between wise and discerning. There are, it's not a question of how intelligent a person is. There are great geniuses out there in the world. And it's not limited to the Jewish people. The Jewish people are not greater geniuses than other people. We have amongst non-Jews, great scientists, great geniuses in business and economics, you have amongst the Jews as well. But I think there is, in this area, there is something which is not limited only to the Jews, but I think it's pretty much more to be found amongst Jews, because we cultivate this type of phenomenon. And that is, take someone like the Rambam. The Rambam is unique. The Rambam is a great genius. And as I said, you have Einstein, well, Einstein's Jewish too, but you have Newton, you have great geniuses. You're going to force me, all the examples I come out are going to be Jewish. I'm going to sound ridiculous. No. What is the difference between someone like a Rambam? And the Rambam is typical of a certain class of great individuals that the Jewish people have produced over the years. I'd say more so than other people. And that is, he's not a specialist. He's not limited to one area. Most of the thinkers, most of the intellectuals, the great ones, are great in a particular area. Whether it be psychology, or it could be math, or it could be physics, or it could be economics. But that's the way it is. But the Torah cultivates the mind in such a way that it has what's called transfer value. That a person becomes perfected in a certain methodology, a certain way of thinking, and has the capacity to apply that wisdom to virtually any area. That was epitomized by the Rambam. The Rambam was a genius in every area. In Torah, in the halachic area, in the philosophical area. He knew all the sciences, math, the ability, psychology. There was not about an area of human knowledge that he wasn't adept in and a master of. He had that type of mind and that type of a training. So I think that's what Yosef is alluding to over here. Wise and discerning, the ability to discern. Because this individual has to have the power to appoint the Apkei Pekidim. He has to appoint his people because he can't be over the entire land. Obviously, he has to work with other people. But all of that, he is the central figure to whom everybody will report. He will have access to all of the knowledge, and in order to do so, he has to be able to understand all these areas. He has to understand the agricultural. He has to understand the political. He has to understand the economic. He has to understand security issues. Interestingly enough, you see later on that Yosef just so happened to be there when the brothers came in. He was personally overseeing the distribution because when the time came and you had an issue of homeland security, foreigners were coming from all over. That's a whole new area of wisdom, of diplomacy, of security, of economic issues, of currency issues. And Yosef, of course, Rashi said that Yosef was also waiting for an opportunity. He knew his family would be coming down. But aside from that, that was part of his job. He was the one that would oversee everything. One mind who is able to see the entire picture. Every aspect of the picture. That is what he's telling Pharaoh over here is vital for this kind of an endeavor. It just seems to me that it has some connection with, and some relevance, which is learned from this, in terms of the breakdowns that occurred, which are now being addressed, the breakdowns that led to 9/11. You didn't really have that type of thing. You don't have that type of thing. And the president is someone who's dependent. He does not have expertise in all these areas. So he's dependent on what the other experts tell him, but he himself is not an expert in those areas. If you had an individual who had the kind of a mind, the depth and the breadth, the ability to branch out over many, many different areas of knowledge and to see how everything correlates with everything else, sort of like a computer does. But obviously the human dimension is greater than what a computer can do in terms of conceptualization and in terms of creativity. That, I think, is what he communicated to Pharaoh, that if this is done, if they prepare, v'chimesh eseres Mitzrayim, if you have the right kind of a person, if you have the right kind of a system in place, then he's confident, there's a certain confidence that Yosef has, that they'll be able to, not just to sustain themselves, but something which in and of itself is the greatest disaster, will, because of the application of this wisdom, be converted into something which will be a tremendous thing, especially for the land of Egypt and for Pharaoh. Pharaoh will emerge with tremendous new power and wealth if he seizes the opportunity. That, I say, is something which Yosef was mandated to tell by the very dream itself. But this was not a stranger. It wasn't something after the fact. It was rather stemming from his understanding of the communication that God gave. Let me just close this Sephardo. Give me a second. Yeah, the Sforno, on verse 41:28, when he says, this is what I said to Pharaoh, Asher Elokim Oseh, that which God is doing, Hero es Pharaoh, he has shown to Pharaoh. So the Sforno says, Hu Adava, Imnin Harav, the matter of the famine, that's the thing, Shamarti, that I said, Shehigit Leparo, that God told Leparo, that is, Kidei shelo tikarei ta'aretz merav. God told it to Paro in order that the land should not be cut off in the famine. Hero es Paro, God has shown Paro, shenei asava. He showed him the years of the abundance. Lodia, to inform him, b'ma yoshia zaro, min arav. With what? With what he would save his nation. So he showed him the outcome of the famine, and he showed him the means by which he would be able to sustain. It's interesting, we see another aspect over here, and that is how we should approach the Chesed Hashem, the compassion of God. The compassion of God doesn't work the way we would always expect it. We are looking for magical solutions. We want to sit back and we have things that are bothering us, we have problems we have to deal with, and we just wish they'd go away. Or we have this sense that even when we pray to God, we sort of have this childish notion of some kind of a magical solution. Suddenly all the problems will be gone, all my economic problems will be gone. As opposed to what we see over here, that the chesed of Hashem is that he gives us opportunity. He enlightens us. This was God's compassion by showing them, by giving them the information. But the outcome, that depends on you. That's the philosophy that he had to communicate to Pharaoh. God doesn't work out outcomes for you. That is a primitive, idolatrous approach. The idolater is like a child. He wants magical solutions. He doesn't want to have to be involved. He doesn't want to be to have the burden of having to use his mind and to think and to use discipline, to use intelligence. His idea of a god, of a deity, is it's a magical thing to protect him. His guardian angel just protects him and magically scoops him out of trouble. The situation magically changes. What Yosef was telling him was it doesn't work that way. The mercy of God is that he gave us atachonei le'yodam das, that God mercifully bestows das upon us. That's the greatest gift. God has given us the capacity for wisdom and knowledge, first and foremost, of course, to be able to recognize God and to have a relationship with God. And then in terms of all of the issues that confront us, the ability to use our das. That's where God intervenes. He gives us the ability to use our mind. That's, if a person is given an opportunity to use his resources and his wisdom to deal with an issue and to correct it, that's the greatest expression of justice. That's the thing. That's what God has given you. God has given you a window, an insight into his plan for the future, and you have the ability to take that and by using wisdom, only by using wisdom. If you don't use wisdom, it's not going to work. So if you want to know, if Paro is anxious, you want to know, well, what does the dream say? Should I be worried? Should I be in a state of anxiety? Is it going to be gloom and doom, or is it going to be great? The answer is, it depends on the plan. It depends on the plan. It depends on what you do. And it's up to you. It's amazing if you see the reaction of Paro. He really succeeded in effectuating a change in Paro. This wasn't the same Paro who had asked Yosef originally. There was a change of power, because power, it says that the matter was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all of his servants. So notice, nobody took umbrage at the fact that he was giving unsolicited advice. Because as we said, it was not unsolicited advice. It was a legitimate continuation of the interpretation. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, Hanimsa kazeh, can there be found such as this? Isha sharuach elokimbo, a man in whom there is the Spirit of God. So he recognized something. That this is an individual who lives in a different kind of a way. He has the Spirit of God, so to speak. That is, he operates in accordance with the correct relationship that one ought to have with God. And then Paro said to Yosef, Achare hoti elokim oschez kolzos, if the God has made all of this known to you, ein navon v'chacham kamocha. There's none who is discerning and wise as you. Atati al-Basi, so on and so forth. You see that from this point, what Paro is responding not just by picking Yosef, but by creating for him that position that he outlined. That the only way to do this is not by having separate agencies, but by having one individual of unusual capacity who's an Avar and a Chacham, who's wise and discerning. And he recognized all those qualities in Yosef. And he's responding to what Yosef said, that where does this knowledge come from? After God has informed you of all of this. After God informed you. He doesn't mean to say that you received a specific prophecy from God telling you what to say. Because that wouldn't make any sense. If that's the case, it doesn't. It's not internalized wisdom of your own. It's just a message from God. So then, who is to say that you have these abilities? It means to say that you have a relationship with God. You have access to wisdom of God. Because God has informed you. Meaning that you have obtained, it's your knowledge, it's your wisdom, it's your understanding. And of course, it's all centered upon your whole understanding of reality and your whole relationship to God. This type of a special wisdom, that's what he was looking for. Because he had wise men too. Pharaoh had wise men too. But he recognized that there's something special and unique in the wisdom of Yosef and all areas. In terms of metaphysics, in terms of his knowledge of God, his ability to interpret a prophecy. And you can take that very same knowledge and apply it to the conditions of the physical world and produce tremendous success. Because this knowledge corresponds to reality. It's the truth, and it works on every level. Because it all stems from one source. Everything in the universe stems from one source. And everything operates according to wisdom and laws. And you're an individual that taps into it. That's why you appoint the judge. Okay, I'll pause here.
Hey, Rebbe, two questions.
Yes.
Okay, one person had a question. Alfred had a question regarding, I understand the redundancy of the dreams. He wanted to know why cows and also ears of corn. So Yosef says because God is going to do this fast. That's why he, well, he shanos chalamos, because Hashem's going to do it quick. How did Yosef understand that? And number two...
How did he understand what?
How did he derive that because there were two dreams, that means it's going to happen speedily?
That's a principle. I mean, Yosef, the Torah here doesn't convey to us all the principles of dream interpretation. Yosef was a prophet. The Rambam says, in terms of Yosef's knowledge of dreams and how to interpret them, and, for example, this point that repetition indicates it's going to happen very quickly, the Rambam explains that one who has prophecy has the knowledge. Part of the knowledge that he has is the ability to interpret the simile, in whether it's a prophetic dream or a prophetic vision, for example. And it does not communicate to us. We do not necessarily understand all the principles that are employed, and that's a science, a special science of interpreting prophetic dreams. So here, the Torah is revealing one of them. It's not explaining why it has to be that way. You know, one could speculate. It would appear that that's something that we use. That's something that's not so difficult to understand. That when we repeat something, it's always indicating an emphasis. You're certain. That's something that we use in ordinary discourse. That sometimes you'll repeat something for emphasis. I mean it. I really mean it. When you want to emphasize something, that this is serious, and here it's imminent, so apparently that's the principle of dream interpretation, although I can't really explain to you why it has to be that way.
All right, there was a second question?
Okay.
Just my question, I'm just wondering, you read the Sforno before, and you said that God didn't only tell him the facts, but also how to be successful? I'm just paraphrasing, I think, what you said about Sforno, I just want to understand.
That he indicated that what God is doing, he's shown to you for a purpose. That if he's showing you the good years will be the means of the salvation of the bad years. So use the good years. Yeah, go ahead. Marshall?
Yeah, so, one other point was with the significance you were trying to say before about why the lean cows and ears were more severe. They weren't equivalent in weight.
Yeah, right. That was clear. That was easy to see because That's the meaning of the fact that they went inside their bellies and they didn't expand. They were just as thick as before, which indicated that they wouldn't they wouldn't be sustained. For example, you ever see a what is it? Those snakes that swallow people, and that's why animals are. They start sometimes on these TV shows, these science shows. They'll show you a snake. What kind? What are they? Pythons? Not pythons.
Anacondas.
Yeah. Okay. So when they're swallowing some animal, you see the belly expands tremendously. Okay? Now envision that. A sickly snake would swallow a big animal, and it would not be affected one way or another. That's the indication that the abundance, the prosperity, will not be sustained. And the end result will be, after all this, devastation. As I said, all things being equal, 7 good years followed by 7 bad years, you should be back where you started. You understand what I'm saying? If you start off with
right.
You start off with $100,000, and you make a million, then you lose a million, so you have $100,000. That's not the case. Here you're going to be down to penniless. Okay, Ilana. Perhaps. But I'd rather say that he would have said this anyway. I think he would have said that, honestly. Good question. Questions being raised, was Yosef, in giving this advice, was he framing it in such a way because he was setting himself up to be appointed? It's possible, indeed, the Ramban says that. But my point is, in my opinion, he would have said this regardless. That Yosef was the kind of person, and even if he wasn't in jail at the time, let's assume he wasn't in jail, and word had gotten around that he had the ability to interpret dreams. Of course, he could interpret some other people's dreams for the government, whatever it was. And Paro made this request. Would Yosef have acted differently? If Yosef had no personal motive, nothing to gain from this, would he have acted differently? I think he would have acted the same way, because his basic objective was to teach people as far as he could about the true ideas, the ideas of God. In fact, that's what Rashi does when he was in the house of Potiphar, that Potiphar saw that everything that he did, God brought to fulfillment. He sensed that this was an individual who had a certain relationship with God, because Rashi says that the name of God was constantly on his mouth. He was constantly... He was the kind of person that always spoke his philosophy of life and the truth that he lived by. So certainly, there's no doubt in my mind that Yosef would have done the same for Paro, even if he was not in jail, didn't have any personal motive. And I think he would have given the same advice, even if he wasn't interested in the job. To say that he was doing it purely for selfish reasons, in my opinion, would be a failure to fully appreciate the greatness of someone like Yosef. Paro says there's no one as wise and discerning as you. That's the role of the Jewish people. That is our mission. That if people request our help, if people request our assistance, especially in areas of understanding, of knowledge, of Torah, if somebody wants to learn about Judaism, about Torah, about God, we have a responsibility, we have an obligation. You can't just say, well, I don't feel like doing it. If somebody wants to meet with you and have a few sessions, a non-Jew, to learn about Torah, to learn about Judaism, assuming you have the knowledge, assuming you have the ability, you then have a responsibility to do it. Because that's the mission of the Jewish people, to sanctify the name of God. And how do we sanctify the name of God? Well, first and foremost, through Torah. The Torah is a system which contains a profound wisdom that separates it from all the other religions. And when a person studies it and appreciates, recognizes that this is something unique, that this comes from God, that's sanctification. Now, the fact that Yosef had this knowledge, this ability to interpret the dreams, and he recognized that this is a communication, a divine communication. If that's the case, that meant that God wanted Paro to have this information. Otherwise, why would God cause Paro to have the prophetic dream? It's interesting, Paro himself was not a prophet. Therefore, Paro could not interpret it. So he was in a position where he was carrying this burden of the dream, but he didn't know how to explain it. So why would Yosef not use his knowledge of interpreting dreams to interpret the prophecy? I maintain that Yosef would have done this irrespective and regardless, but I framed my question based upon the fact that he was also in prison. I don't think a person should take the approach that he did this purely because he wants to get out of jail. To me, that doesn't make sense. And in terms of the advice, I think he would have given this advice regardless. Did Yosef want to add that position? I don't know. I really don't know. Why would we say that he did want to have this position? I really don't know. I mean, maybe to some people it seems obvious. Who would not want to be in such a position? I don't know. I'm sorry? Good point. It's outside the province of this particular discussion, but I think it's something that's worth talking about. I do know that some of the commentators say that a motive in giving this advice was that he was propping Paro. He was setting himself up. He was setting Paro up to give him the job. I don't know how they know that. Perhaps they have some insight that I don't have. I don't deny it. I'm not saying it's wrong. All I'm saying is I don't see why you have to say that. I don't see why Yosef, if he considered this to be the right thing to do, he would have done it anyway. And also, to assume that Yosef wanted to have this position, I don't know why we have to assume that. He wanted to have that position. It was a very challenging position, a very difficult position. It wasn't guaranteed that he'd be successful. Nobody knows if they're going to be successful. And it could lead to great results. It could also lead to catastrophic results. The whole point is that the outcome wasn't guaranteed. The outcome would depend. And many factors over here. You could have men, this is entering into a whole new world of politics and scheming. And all kinds of issues could come up. And perhaps Yosef would be happy and just able to sit and learn Torah. I don't know. Once Paro gave him the position, apparently he had to accept it. But did he actually want it? Was he aiming for it? Was he fishing for it? I don't know. I don't see what evidence we have to decide one way or another. Okay, I think we'll stop here then.
I wanted to say, if Yosef had the knowledge, why would he go to Canaan and use that knowledge to make them rich, to make his family rich?
That's another question. He couldn't do that. He was constrained at this point in time. Besides, his other question, why he didn't communicate with his family yet. That's another issue. That was a whole different problem. The family was not ready to hear from Yosef yet. He had to bide his time. Now, whether he saw some fulfillment of the dreams, it's possible to assert that perhaps Yosef sensed some fulfillment of the dream. Because, bear in mind, the dreams did have him being in a position of power, economic power, the first dream. And maybe, once this opportunity came along, he would be having great power, great authority, because of his economic position. Possible. It's possible. I don't know definitively at this point.
Weren't there, like, ears of corn in both dreams, or am I mistaken?
No, second dream was stars, celestial beings.
In the dream of Paro and the dream of Yosef, was it ears of corn in both of the dreams?
I think wheat by Yosef.
Source of wheat.
Well, was it wheat? It wasn't corn, okay.
Now, they used the word corn in the translations to refer to wheat. For some reason, they referred to it as corn.
Oh, so was it?
Okay, everybody.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Shkaf.
All right, yes, Shkaf to you. Thank you very much. Take care, everybody. Be well.
Thank you.
Okay, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, that's it for the shiur. That was Rabbi Mann that was giving a class, so we decided to broadcast it. If there's any questions you have before we sign off, now would be a chance. Alfred, I hope that I addressed your questions. Lee, the class was being broadcast from New York. And I guess you heard some of the background noise. Some of the students have children that they bring with the class. Instead of having home care, so they bring the students. But Rabbi Mann allows that. But Alfred, I think I brought up your questions. Your last question regarding whether Paro admitted of God, it seems to be he did. Because he says, after God has shown you all of this. Okay, my pleasure, Alfred. The next class, you keep a look at the schedule on the live classes page. You'll see a schedule, Shoshana, and you'll see when the next class. Right now, there's a class that I'm scheduling for Wednesday at 1:30, and that's going to be 1:30 New York time, and that'll be on the event where Moses was going down to Egypt at God's command. And when he went to a lodge, so it says that God sought to kill him. So the question was, what was going on there? So that'll be what we'll take up on Wednesday at 1:30 New York time. Okay, Mati, thank you very much. All right, so if that's all, so we'll wrap up the class for today. And again, the classes will be posted online, so this way, if you missed any part of the class, you'll be able to see it on the audio files page. All right, so good night to everybody, and I'm glad you're able to enjoy the class. And we'll see you on Wednesday at 1:30 Eastern Time, 1:30 New York Time. Okay, have a good night to everybody.